Wisconsin's history is really fascinating, and it's filled with interesting characters and memorable events. It takes a special kind of writer to be able to pull out a lot of those stories that really describe and illustrate a particular time and place. Martin Hintz is certainly a skilled historian and storyteller. He worked at the Milwaukee Sentinel as an editor and reporter, and he's the author of more than 100 books, many on Wisconsin topics. And his most recent book is Wisconsin Farm Lore, Kicking Cows, Giant Pumpkins, and Other Tales from the Back 40. And he joins us from our studios in Milwaukee. Martin Hintz, great to have you back on the show. How are you doing?
Well, happy harvesting, Larry. How are you doing?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm doing fine. And I've got to tell you, we had Judith had some fun with this with your book this week. She enrolled about five other people, including herself, to record little pieces from your book, and I'm going to try and sort of intersperse those during our discussion today. Some of them are really good, and they'll make for a nice discussion as we move along today. How did you come to write a book specifically about Wisconsin's agricultural history, and where did you find all that archival material?
Well, I've done several books for The History Press, the publisher of this particular book, and I think we've discussed these before, Larry. We did short stories from Wisconsin, and then we did the Milwaukee Brewing and Distilling History one, and this one seemed like a natural, too, because my wife and I have a small farm here in Milwaukee County, so in dirt under the fingernails, as they say, and so it just seemed a natural flow, and the editor said, hey, let's do that. We haven't done one on agricultural lore before, so a lot of digging into the archives and, the County Historical Society, State Historical Society, the university, a lot of good stuff out there.
And then just maybe describe how you put this together into your book. You've got, I think, five different sections, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I tried to organize it, more or less, I guess. Farmers are kind of, they like to jump around to different things, but first started out with the land and moved into people and then animals, crops, and products, figuring that that would be one way of organizing it. And there are a series of short vignettes within each one of those chapters. Whether it's about the farmer, that would be in under people, and how to, different bits about cows and pigs, that's under the animals naturally. So you don't have to sit down and read it from cover to cover, but hey, that'd be okay too.
Dick in Bark River, Michigan has a comment or question. Hi there, Dick.
Hello again. Thank you. Your guest might know, as immigrant population of Europeans mostly came into the Northwest Territories and Wisconsin. The Native American tribes did have, I believe, corn, maize, squash. Were those plants native, or were they brought by previous migrations of Native Americans?
The Native Americans had what they call the three sisters. Grown in the same mound, there would be the corn and then squash and beans. The beans would climb up the corn stalks, and then the squash would keep the weeds down. So that was a great traditional crop, and they've been here for thousands of years, naturally. And then the immigrants brought their own special vegetable clippings and seeds and whatnot. And then the University of Wisconsin was great in helping even improve the crops, and the extension services today are working real hard to make sure that we get the best product available here in the state. So there's a lot of good sharing of ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for calling, Dick. We have a rich farming history, but back in the day, there had to be people willing to settle and work the land. And if you look at a map of the U.S. today, we're kind of in the eastern half. But there was a day when we were the frontier, and people had to be convinced to farm here. And I've got a little clip. Let's listen to this recording of the text of an ad to entice settlers to the Midwest. Let's listen.
Why pay rent? Better own a farm. Start now. thousands of acres of fertile lands capable of raising the finest quality of farm products in luxurious abundance are for sale upon reasonable terms in Wisconsin, Minnesota, South Dakota, Iowa, Nebraska, and Wyoming. Referent to reliable statistics, will the fact that the pursuits of agriculture, stock raising, and dairying in these states are attended with profitable results. Chicago and Northwestern Railway affords easy access to unfailing markets. Correspondents solicited from intending settlers send for a free copy of the Northwestern Homeseekers.
Great. They were pushing the markets even way back then. It's all location, location. Right, Larry? You get a good spot.
Oh, well, that's how we get a lot, wound up with a lot of people here in Wisconsin,
sure
I guess.
Sure did. Well, it was easy to get here through the lakes, you know, the Great Lakes. And even my great-grandfather, I've got a little story about him in here, too. He came from Templemore, Ireland, back in the 1830s. And he settled around the town of Erin with, I don't know, 10,000 brothers and sisters, it seemed like. And then a bunch of the crew moved on to Iowa and elsewhere. But that was way back when... He could have settled in Canada, but he said, no, I've lived under the English government long enough. I'm coming down to America.
Yeah.
So that was how he wound up here and settled in Wisconsin for a bit. And just about everybody else around here, I'm sure, has a family story like that.
It was certainly not an easy life on the farm, especially before there was a lot of technology to help out. When did a lot more of the mechanization come into play on the farm?
Well, in the early days, the 1850s, we were such a wheat growing state, and then they started developing better and better threshing machines around the turn of the Civil War and a little bit afterwards, and it made it a lot easier. They'd have to clear all that acreage by hand, you know, with axes and saws, and then stump it out and pull it out with oxen, and you know, walk 10 miles to get a 100-pound bag of flour and walk back home that same night. And it was tough business. And once they started mechanizing, right before the last turn of the previous century, then we really things really took off. And then we started doing cows, and then that was kind of took the emphasis away from the monoculture, just the wheat. So then gradually Wisconsin became the dairy state. So we evolved along a lot of different ways.
Science and technology there, it didn't just help the farmers. It made a big difference in the work of those doing the production as well.
Oh, sure, yeah. How'd you like to milk 300 cows by hand? I don't know.
Milk them all. See, the most I ever milked was 70, but not by hand.
Whoa.
But that was with a machine, yeah. Milking machines.
it does build up the muscles, that's for sure.
Oh, man. Well,
and don't get kicked by a cow. You got to watch where you stand. You know?
Oh, so, yeah. We had a couple of kickers.
Oh, boy.
Well, industrialization and food science were full of exciting developments way back when, back in the 20s. And I've got an announcement for a Milwaukee Rotary Luncheon. That this is from your book, of course, set for March 4th of 1924. So let's listen to this.
Next week is National Canned Food Week, and the luncheon will be a very unusual one. Every item on the menu will be made of an appetizing article that can be purchased in cans. Our speaker will be Mr. W.E. Nicoloy, Business Secretary for the Wisconsin Pecanners Association. He'll tell us some interesting facts regarding the canned food industry, which has grown into enormous proportions in the United States.
Well, there you have it. It's packaging and marketing. You know, they got to move the product. And, you know, Wisconsin was in the forerunner of a lot of that development of how to make things better and easier, everything from refrigeration in cars or train cars to get product safely to different places and cans. So
cans. It was a novel thing to have.
Sure was.
And that particular luncheon, everything came from a can, and that was kind of a big deal.
It sure was, yeah.
So that was pretty cool. But by the way, let me get our listeners involved here. If you'd like to join in, how aware are you of our agricultural history? What are you curious about? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe we've got a story to tell, too. 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. And we'd certainly love to hear from you. We had an email from Genevieve in Madison who said, I heard there was quite a tobacco industry in Wisconsin. When was that and where was it centered? And you certainly cover that in your book.
Well, Edgerton, central Wisconsin, is still the hub of Wisconsin's tobacco industry. And it's a lot of the leaves are more for cigar wrappings than actual cigarettes. And they have a festival celebrating that every summer. And now it's almost become a book and film festival. And it's usually it's in September, and I'm going to be doing a little talk there, I think, myself, but that's kind of the hub of the
tobacco. Edgerton, Wisconsin.
You betcha. Sterling North's territory, and it's a great area and a lot of fun. Always things happening. And if I could backtrack just one second about threshing, you can see a lot of the old-time way of doing it, like Old World Wisconsin. Every autumn they have a harvest fest in October, and that's always fun. The kids can come out and watch how they used to do the threshing and watch how machinery has advanced over the years. And then up in Valmy in Door County, there's also an old-time threshery that's coming up in August, and that's also a lot of fun to kind of see that. That's August 17th, the 19th, and you can even have your kids dress up as farmers and win competitions, antique tractor pulls. And so ag tourism is kind of a fun thing where you can see all that past stuff and see how we have progressed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, in your book, there's a little segment on threshing. It always hard work to grow and harvest those crops, but it doesn't mean it wasn't fun. There was fun to be had in this, too. Let's listen to a reading of an excerpt of Wisconsin author Hamlin Garland's book, Son of the Middle Border, and this also from your book.
We wished every day was threshing day. The wind blew cold, the clouds went flying across the bright blue sky, and the straw glistened in the sun. With jarring snarl, the circling zone of dogs dipped into the greasy wheels, and the single trees and pulley chains chirped clear and sweet as crickets. The dust flew, the whip cracked, and the men working swiftly to get the sheaves to the feeder, or to take the straw away from the tail end of the machine, were like warriors, urged to desperate action by battle cries. The stackers wallowing to their waists in the fluffy straw pile seemed gnomes acting for our amusement. The straw pile, what delight we had in that! What joy it was to go up to the top, where the men were stationed, one behind the other, and to have them toss huge forkfuls of the light, fragrant stalks upon us, laughing to see us emerge from our gold cover.
That's a great little clip, isn't it?
That is fantastic. And there's a good picture on that same page where that essay is by a photographer of mine, Jim Brozek, and he took some pictures out of Old World of one of those old-time threshery, and you can just see the farmer up there pitching the hay, and it's quite a sight.
Talking today with Martin Hintz. By the way, his last name is spelled, some people are wondering, it's H-I-N-T-Z. And he's the author of many books, including the one we're talking about today. It's Wisconsin Farm Lore, Kicking Cows, Giant Pumpkins, and Other Tales from the Back 40. Our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. Thanks for listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller with my guest, Martin Hintz, who is the author of more than 100 books, but his latest, Wisconsin Farm Lore, Kicking Cows, Giant Pumpkins, and Other Tales from the Back 40. Lots of callers online to visit, so let's go to Melissa in Oconto next. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My particular ancestor that I'm thinking about came from Norway, had a great farm, great family, just decided to get up and go somewhere. And ended up in Valders and started another farm. And he actually also started another family. And I was wondering if that was common.
Well, that depends.
Yeah.
If he left somebody at home or not, I don't know.
He had a total family farm, everything at home. Mm-hmm. And when he came over to America, he started all over again.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people did that. And perhaps some of their relatives or their wife or significant other might have died, and then they remarried. And because you needed a lot of helpers on a farm back then. And I've got some fun stories about the Norwegians and whatnot who all came over and had to really work all day long and half the night just to get the grounds ready and harvesting.
Yeah, some great stories. Thanks, Melissa, for calling. Wade in Wisconsin Dells. Hi to you.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Hi, I would like to let your listeners know of an event coming up on the 17th, 18th, and 19th of August in Baraboo, Wisconsin. This event is an agricultural event called the Badger Steam and Gas Engine Club, and what the average person can do is they can have the opportunity to see antique working agricultural equipment, in most cases over 100 years old, used. The methods that were used on the farm can be viewed. The people and how they live their lives can be seen, as well as all of the other events and surrounding activities can be just basically seen, felt, heard, touched. And it's a great experience to educate kids and other people if you just like to learn more.
Well, that's a great place to be. I've been there, and it's a lot of fun. And I mentioned that in my book, Off the Beaten Path, Wisconsin, too. And, Larry, if I could mention two places people can find out about information like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for agricultural tourism, you know, visiting farms and whatnot, it's visitdairyland.com. That's an easy, that's a great website, visitdairyland, all one word, .com. And, of course, the Department of Tourism under travelwisconsin.com. travelwisconsin.com. Those are two fantastic places you can find out about events such as that one, and then the threshery up in Valmy, and of course State Fair coming up and all the other good things. County Fair is going on around the state now, and it's the time for fun.
Oh yeah, and the fairs, the county fairs are really a lot of fun. We enjoy going to them so much, and the state fair, oh, every year, a lot of things are the same at the state fair every year, but there's a lot of things that are different too. And frankly, it's kind of nice to have to be able to look forward to some of those things that are there every single year at the state fair.
Yeah, well, Abe Lincoln spoke at in 1859 here in Wisconsin. The fair was called the Wisconsin State Agricultural Society Exposition. How about that? And it was held in Milwaukee, kind of around the same area where Marquette University is right now. And I wonder if Abe would have had a cream puff or something if he showed up today. Or something on a stick, you know, chocolate something on a stick. You can get all that.
He'd get the chocolate bacon on a stick.
Oh, boy. Oh, my gosh. But the Wisconsin Product Pavilion is the best place I found with all their duck fajitas and cherries and hand-dipped ice cream, and you get three grilled cheese sandwiches for $5. Oh, you can't go wrong.
No, it's a great place to go, and I did enjoy. You actually had a couple of speeches by Lincoln.
Yeah.
In the book, and I was really interested to read those because I guess I can't remember ever reading that he had spoken in Wisconsin.
Well, he, you know, he Illinois fellow. He got up here every so often, and
sure.
He was you know, pounding the pavement for things. And he was really an agronomist at heart, an agriculturalist, and he fit in really, really well. And we've had a succession of other great political leaders here in the state, like William Horde, who was you know, governor 1891, and he helped get the dairy industry going. And Fighting Bob La Follette was a farmer, and so we have a great heritage of fantastic political leaders who really advanced the cause of agriculture. And Abe Lincoln was one. He spoke out for everywhere, all over the country.
Yeah. Phil in Hebron, Illinois, up next. And you, by the way, you can join in, too, if you have a question or comment or an experience to share. I hope you will at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. And now let's turn to Phil in Hebron, Illinois. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Throw in a part of agriculture that a lot of people don't think about, and we're going to talk about honeybees. Most people don't realize honeybees are, in fact, European honeybees, and they're an introduced species. The Native Americans referred to honeybees as the white man's fly because they could tell how far immigration had gone, because the bees, by swarming, would often be slightly ahead of where the people were that were coming. And they were so valuable, it wasn't uncommon on parcels that were sold for it to list the dimensions of the property, any woods that were obtained, and any beehives or bee swarms that were in bee trees on that property. That was how they were considered that high a value that it was actually listed on the deeds.
That is very cool.
Yeah, well, that's you know, just shows the one of the good things that was brought over by you know, outside settlers, and a lot of our neighbors here have honeybees, and boy, it's so nice to share that. It's so rich and nutritious. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great reminder about the fact that they're not native, but they certainly, I think they've been around long enough now we can kind of consider them almost native.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, in Ashapon, they have the Honey of a Museum over there, and that's a fun place to visit. And you can try different tastes of honey. The bee goes to different clovers or flowers, and they have little spigots, and you can test those out. And that's a fun place to stop by.
Mike in Mindoro, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hello. I was wondering if you had an opportunity to read the published report of the Wisconsin Secretary of Agriculture in 1910. It described all the problems in Wisconsin agriculture, how people are adulterating food and like cutting honey with corn syrup. And one case I saw was canning of peas and with the pearl onions. They weren't onions. They were yellow nutset roots.
So, well, I didn't catch that one, but
my goodness,
got to be so careful.
And they were going around checking all the stores on weights and measures, and at the state fair, they burned all the confiscated measures that were used in stores that were cheating the customers.
Oh boy! Well, it shows that somebody was on the watch. Always good to have a watcher for that. It keeps us strong and healthy.
Thanks, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. You know, frankly, weights and measures. We still, Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection still gets involved in going around the state and going into stores and checking the scales.
Yeah, shows our government's on our side.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. The University of Wisconsin played a big role in furthering the agriculture in Wisconsin as well. And maybe you could comment a bit on that.
Well, way back, the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents, back as early as 1850, pitched for development of an ag school. And what they said back then was the application of the sciences to the useful arts, including every industrial occupation which ministers to the well-being of society, have become too numerous and too important to be neglected in any wisely constructed system of general education. They went on to talk about how important it was to have an agricultural department here in the attached to the university, and with their support, it really took off. And now we are tops in the country for developing and new strains of things and helpful, health items to attach to it, keeping products clean and all that. So, the Regents went on to say, agriculture rises to the dignity of a profession and indicates its undoubted claim to stand not only in the front rank of experimental arts, but side by side with a learned professions in interest and honor as well as in profit. So there you go.
covers
all sides of things.
There you go. No doubt about it. And Wisconsin, UW-Madison is a land-grant institution. And a lot of people hear that term, and I thought you did a nice job of explaining just exactly what a land-grant institution is.
Well, the government gave out, that they wanted to have people get out and use the land. And they set up a network of Congress, U.S. Congress set up a network of colleges devoted to things like agricultural mechanics. And each state received some federal land to build these sorts of schools. And Wisconsin was lucky enough to get over 200,000 acres and was able to have some of their schools developed on this federally provided land. And that's kind of where that kind of got started, that whole idea of a land grant. And many other states here in the Midwest have it too, Michigan and Minnesota and Iowa. And and then the state legislature opted to direct funds to keep that going, so they both systems of government or both levels were really quite instrumental in helping us get to where we are today.
Absolutely. And I forget now what that sold for. Was it like a buck an acre or something?
$1.25. That was cheap.
$1.25 an acre, and that financed the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
It sure did. And then the legislature stepped up to the plate and helped support it, and here we are. Same thing.
We are. Still doing it today. Of course, there's a lot of satisfaction to be had from growing a variety of crops for use by your own family and for sale to others as well. Hamlin Garland won a Pulitzer Prize for his 1921 story rows of Dutcher's Coulee? Is that, I think it's out.
Yeah, the Coulee is like a little valley, and there are a lot of these coulees or valleys up around La Crosse where he lived for some time. So he wrote a lot about the people who lived there and the tough times they had back after the Civil War. And he's one of my favorite authors. I think that's why I put so many of his notes in there. In fact, my dad knew Hammond Garland way back when in the 1930s, so it's a little personal touch in there, too. So.
Well, I've got a short excerpt that really shows the beauty and the bounty of a Wisconsin farm written by Hammond Garland from that. Let's listen.
It was full summer when we got back to Wisconsin, and the old homestead was at its best. The garden was red with ripening fruit, the trees thick with shining leaves, and the thrushes and catbirds were singing in quiet joy. In the fields, the growing corn was sown its ordered spears, and the wheat was beginning to wave in the gentle wind. No land could be more hospitable, more abounding, or more peaceful than our valley.
Well, I think that sums it up. When you ever, drive anywhere throughout the state, you get that sense of serenity. And but you know, there's a lot of hard work that goes into making that. You just don't have all of a sudden a beautiful, bountiful field. I was out picking beans myself this morning at 5:30, so I know it takes a lot of watering and hoeing. And my wife, poor Pam's out there doing the same thing.
Doing the same thing while you're sitting here talking to me in an air-conditioned studio.
Yeah, really. I'll hear about that, I'm sure. So,
talking with Martin Hintz today. He is the author of Wisconsin Farm Lore, Kicking Cows, Giant Pumpkins, and Other Tales from the Back 40. You may have a question or comment or maybe a story to share. I hope you join in with your comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question, a comment, or even a photo there. And Lorraine and Eagle wants to make sure that people know that Old World Wisconsin is an excellent place to learn about the history of agriculture in our state. Different time periods, different immigrant groups are represented. It's really a fascinating place, Martin. I bet you've been there.
Oh, that's a great spot. And as I mentioned, they always have this fantastic harvest festival every autumn. But coming up in August, first part of August, they have their Laurel Ingalls Wilder Days. And she was had some Wisconsin roots as well, and she wrote Little House on the Prairie and all that. And kids can see how they ground corn and shelled corn or grain and all that, and watch how weaving is done. And kids can even dress up like a book character if they want. And I when I was a kid, I loved that one about the boy, farmer boy, and about all they were threshing or something, and they came in to eat, and ate and pumpkin pies and all this sort of stuff. And I've been hungry ever since. And I think that's another reason to write a book like this, So, but Old World has this great program coming up, Laurel Ingalls Wilder's Day on August 4 to August 5. So that's a fun stop.
You know, when I was a kid, a little kid, there was still a lot of the neighborhood back and forth collaboration. And it really, and we were, of course, on the farm, and it was, really was an exciting time for kids, but and a lot of work for everybody. But the meals, the dinner, lunch was dinner. It was breakfast, dinner, and supper. That's that's how it was back in those days. And dinner, that lunch, what we call lunch now, was enormous.
Well, you're up early and working, and you had to take a break, and boy, you used up the calories. So I don't think there were a lot of overweight people in that particular era, because they're out pitching and hoeing. Some of those bales were 90 to 100 pounds, and you have to lift them up, and you never stop, and you're running from one place to the next. And even now, farmers put in a lot of hard effort as well. So nothing but respect for them. And the groups that represent them, the Farm Bureau and the NFO and all that, they're pitching for the health and welfare of the farmer now, too. So it's always, always good to have them on hand.
Wanda in Wild Rose has a comment. Hi, Wanda.
Hi. I was just listening to you guys talk about farming, and I grew up on a farm. I lived on a farm until I left home. We had a 1,000-acre farm 60 cattle and that we milked, and it was just the best time of my life. I mean, we worked hard, but it was just great. We created so many memories, me and my cousins. So there's three brothers that were all together in this farm, and it just brought our families really close.
Well, that's neat. There's a little quote in here, if I might read this little paragraph.
Go ahead.
One farmer asked his dad, this is back in the 1940s, my dad said, if you're a farmer, there's three things you have to remember. You'll never go hungry, you'll never get rich, you'll never run out of a job. And so the kid says, well, why in the heck can't a farmer get rich as well as anybody else? And the dad says, well, if they did, who'd do all the work? So anyway, I think our listener would understand that. 1,000 acres, that's a lot.
That's a big farm, Wanda.
It sure is.
At that time.
I've even often thought about writing stories of my farm life, because we just had so much fun growing up, and the animals, and I think every kid should actually try to, you know, grow up on a farm or have a chance to or work on a farm, because I put my son on, when he turned 14, I made him start working on a farm, and it just teaches them responsibility.
Sure.
The worth of a dollar. I think our kids should go to the farm and work.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that'd be a great thing. Wanda, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call.
But there is still time for fun, too. There was a little story in the book about some friends have a farm up north of Port Washington, and then back all the neighborhood kids would come over to that respective pond and go ice skating in the wintertime, and the mom, the farm wife, would always have hot chocolate ready, and the dad would have plowed it off with a team, you know, and a bit of a plow, and the mother always had visions of the whole thing going through the ice, but never did. But all the kids from the neighboring farms would come over after hours, and they'd go ice skating until dark, and it was grand fun.
Oh, lots and lots of fun. I've got a couple more clips that I really would like to use. One of them is from, you mentioned Horde, William
Governor
Dempster,
Horde, yeah.
W.D. Horde.
Mm-hmm.
He was the founder of Horde's Dairymen, obviously a very strong advocate for developing breeds of cattle for better milk production. But I really enjoyed reading some of his thoughts about calves.
Oh, yeah. That's
good. Let's listen to that.
From my earliest infancy down to today, I was brought up along with bovine babies. I have had a deep interest in the little animal called the calf, and as a consequence, at an early age, I made something of a study of the animal. Calves are very much alike, whether they come from one breed or another. As a rule, those who have had experience in dealing with them discover that a thoroughbred calf is the most intelligent. There is a long line of heredity in its behalf, but the most provoking thing on this green earth at times is a calf. He will stand and regard you with a look of mild and innocent baby-like wonder and a stupidity that is unfathomable.
So there you go. He knew his cows. And which end was which. So he was quite the fellow. And you can still the Horde Dairy Museum in Fort Atkinson is another interesting spot.
Oh, beautiful place. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And his magazine, the Horde Dairyman, is still being published.
So, absolutely.
Really helpful for anybody in the business. And you can sure learn a lot about cows.
He was and governor of Wisconsin, as you mentioned earlier, and he used that position to further dairying, didn't he?
Oh, he sure did. He really advocated it, and he surrounded himself with scientists and people who thought the same, and they really pitched for pure food acts and things like this that would ensure that the milk would be clean and good to drink, and all the other agricultural products in the state were just as healthful, and they were really quite ahead of their time, I think. One listener called in and laughed about, you know, how it wasn't quite that way, but it took some people to keep an eye on them, you know, and, make sure that things wouldn't sneak through. So Horde was quite a good fellow in that respect. He was really careful.
Yeah, he was a great guy, visionary man.
He sure was.
For sure. I think when we come right down to it, this whole history is about people's connection to the land. And I had one more excerpt I wanted to use from My Land, My Home, My Wisconsin by author Bob Gard. And let's listen to that one.
Ours is the home place. I think about that so often, what it means to have a home place. And how all the ties to family and friends are there. The land is ours. It has our blood and the blood of all our people. My children feel an affinity of the land so deeply. They come home to the home place. It is our farm. I feel a deep, deep bind between me and the land. I feel it every time I walk out across the fields. Like my ancestor, I want to shout out, "This is mine. This is my land, my farm." I know I can never understand the whole story. I wish I could. And the years of struggle, the years of change, how can I know of them, really?
That is very...
Boy, he was such a marvelous author, and boy, he pegged it on that one, I think.
He really mm-hmm. did. And probably a great way to end, Marty. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Well, it's my pleasure.
It was a lot of fun. And I would expect that there will come a time we'll be talking again.
Well, I certainly hope so. We'll pull out another book, maybe more on pigs or something that time around. We'll come up with a subject. And now it's back to weeding, I think.
Okay, get back to your garden.
Okay.
Thanks, Martin. Martin, I'll tell you what, Martin Hintz is a good guy. He is the author of 100 books, more than 100 books, and many of them on Wisconsin topics. And, of course, today the program was about his book, Wisconsin Farm Lore. And I want to say a special thanks to all of our readers today. Noah Ovshensky, Chris Molina, Cynthia Schuster, Rob Ferret, Dan Steger, and Judith Sears Poisson all did a great job reading and added a lot to the show as we visited with Marty. Well, coming up next, we're going to switch gears a little and turn from what's produced in the state to what we eat. Nutritionist Susan Nitzke joins us to help us decipher food labels and a whole lot more. So stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.